polling is out in Jacksonville's mayor's race. Good morning. We're live from Studio 5, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. And just ahead, we'll tell you where the candidates stand with just a month to go until Election Day. What are your thoughts about the local elections? Get on the line now. Let us know who you're voting for. It's 549-2937. Then later, it's a new food pantry that looks like a grocery store. We'll tell you about that. Plus, how downtown Jacksonville will be moving this weekend. All of that ahead this morning. But first this hour, a new poll is out today in the city's mayor's race and sheriff's race and some other contests. The latest numbers from UNS Public Opinion Research Lab shows incumbent Lenny Curry is above 50% as he seeks re-election, polling among likely voters at 52%, with his most serious challenger, Ana Lopez Brochet, a distant second. Now, not surprisingly, crime is the issue at the top of voters' minds. Mike Binder runs UNF's Public Opinion Research Lab and joins us now with the numbers. They were calling late into the night last night to get these fresh numbers, so thanks for getting up with us this morning.
Oh, thanks for having me.
And here's our question to callers. Who will get your vote for Jacksonville mayor and sheriff and other races? What are your questions about the March city elections? Give us a call right now, 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online, send your emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax and let us know your thoughts on Facebook. Okay, so the race that everybody was waiting to see where things stand, of course, is the city's mayor's race, Mike. How do things stand for Mayor Lenny Curry and his most prominent challenger, Ana Brochet, heading into the March elections?
It's a tale of two cities. Things stand pretty well for Lenny Curry. We got him up over 52%, and that's still with a large section of people that are undecided, 22%. So you got to assume he's going to pick up some of those undecided votes, too. Ana Lopez Brochet, on the other hand, is far behind, 15%, barely registering in a lot of ways. And I think the path to victory for her is probably out of reach at this point.
Okay. The election is March 19th. There are still several weeks to go, although, as you've been pointing out to folks, absentee ballots have already gone out. So the path for Lenny Curry is to stay the course, obviously. Keep above 50%. For Ana Brochet, it's to try to make up some ground in these final weeks.
She has a lot of ground to make up. And the problem is she's not making it up with Republicans. Republicans are solidly behind Lenny Curry, 78%. So if that's not where you're going to go, you got to go to the Democrats and the NPAs. The problem there is she's running even with Lenny Curry among Democrats. She needs to be up 80 to 20 at or more, and she's just not. Additionally, NPAs, she's not doing that great there either, and they're going to be such a small portion of the electorate that come March that they're really not going to make that big of a difference.
What is the portion of MPAs that will turn out in March, do you think?
Probably a little less than 10%.
Okay, so even though it's a unitary election, partisan ID is still a factor, not only in this race, but in some of the other contests. What did you find in all the other races? Let's talk about the sheriff's race.
Yeah, party ID is the biggest factor, and I think you really start to see it come into play with the sheriff's race. Tony Cummings, who in the first round of the sheriff's race 4 years ago registered 5 or 6%, but because he's the only Democrat running against a Republican, we have him ticked up at a pretty solid number at 33%. That's a big difference. There hasn't been a lot of campaigning, but because he has that D after his name, that's helping him amongst Democrats.
Okay, but Mike Williams, incumbent sheriff, who's getting criticized on public safety issues, still above 50%.
Yeah, at 56% in the head-to-head race, 11% undecided. That's solid. That's a 17-point lead in a race where you would expect to see more Republicans turn out than Democrats, and I think that's a positive for him in his reelection bid.
Okay, so as things stand now, Mike Binder says both Mayor Curry and Sheriff Williams are favored to win outright, it sounds like you think, in March, although anything can happen in an election. We'll have to wait and see. I vividly remember Alvin Brown being up right before he lost re-election. So you never say never. That said, you do have some solid methodology behind your polling. And let me ask you, too, as a follow-up, you find overwhelmingly voters say crime is their top concern, yet they don't seem inclined to punish the incumbents on this issue.
There's an irony there. Crime has been talked about in Jacksonville for decades, but heavily the last year or two. And for good reason. We've had a lot of things come out in the news and some, you know, even just this past weekend wasn't great for crime in Jacksonville. But of those that think crime is the most important issue, 58% are willing to support Lenny Curry. So you have Anna Lopez-Brochet hammering Curry on the Curry crime wave. That's her big issue. And people that agree that that's a big issue are overwhelmingly supporting Lenny Curry.
And why do you think that is? Because Lenny Curry was able to successfully oust Alvin Brown 4 years ago
on
with
crime.
That same issue.
The exact message. I think part of it is the political aspect. You know, he's a Republican. Republicans are concerned about crime. They're going to vote for the Republican. They might view Anna as a turncoat because she's leaned on and reached out to the Democrats in this community. But I also think there's some real policy there. You know, Lenny's done a lot to increase the sheriff's budget. We have a lot more officers on the street and a lot more money being spent on JSO than we did 4 years ago.
It hasn't helped, though.
It hasn't helped. It hasn't helped. I mean, crime is, we are not in the state of crime that maybe some people think we are. It's very localized here in Jacksonville. It is not everywhere. And the numbers aren't dramatically different than they've been for the last couple of years in the aggregate. But it certainly is higher than it should be.
Okay. And then you also pulled some at-large city council races. Can you take us through those before we go to many calls for you? Lots of interest in our local politics this morning.
Yeah, I think we pulled on all the five at-large districts. And I think the one thing to keep in mind is there is a ton of indecision. People just don't know a lot about these candidates. Group one, we have Lisa King ahead a lot, but she's running against three Republicans. And I don't think she's going to get to 50%. We have her at 32 right now. So that'll probably go to May, and she'll be facing a single Republican in probably a very competitive race. Group two, with Mason and Salem, that's a head-to-head between a Democrat and a Republican. We have it neck and neck. We have the Republican up a point at 36 to 35 with 29% undecided. But again, that's a toss-up race. In District 3 with Tommy Hazzuri, again, well-known, been on the scene for a very long time. He's up 38 to 26 over Greg Rochelle, his Republican opponent. There's another Democrat in there who's registering 12%. That might keep Hazzuri from getting to 50 this time and force him to May. We'll have to see how that turns out. But then there's the Carlucci race, which is the Republican at-large seat. There's three Republicans running in that. Carlucci's ahead by a lot at 43% to Don Redmond at 14% with McCart coming in at 3. But again, 40% don't know there as well. And then finally in District 5, the McIntyre and Newby's re-election race. Again, a very close race. We have Newby up by 2 points, 31 to 29. But in reality, that's a toss-up race. Nikki Brunson's registering at 6%, but 34% undecided. So these city council races, if we thought the mayor's race was late starting as far as advertising from Brochet, these city council races are barely beginning. We're just starting to see yard signs out there. And early voting starts in 12 days. This is crazy.
That is. Now, you did not poll all of the council races. There's just too many of them.
There's too many of them, yeah. But the districts are so small. The size of the sample we would get would be extraordinary.
And let's go to your calls now as Mike Binder, pollster extraordinaire, does the full Ginsburg, by the way, this morning, hitting every media outlet in within a 20-mile radius. To talk about his latest polling in our March city elections. The election is March 19th. It's a unitary election. You can vote for any candidate on the ballot. Party doesn't matter, although, as Mike pointed out, party ID is a factor in terms of who people like. If a candidate doesn't get above the 50% threshold on March 19th, they will be forced into a May runoff election. And certainly some of these contests may go to May. What are your thoughts? Who will get your vote for mayor, sheriff? What's on your mind? Give us a call. 549-2937. Andrew is in Riverside right now. Hi, Andrew. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. Thank you for taking my call. I think Mike's hit the nail on the head for me several times when he was talking. You mentioned, you know, who we're voting for in the election, and honestly, I have no idea right now. I definitely like doing my research in terms of candidates. It's something I haven't done yet, but I know come March 19th, when I get to the polls, I'm going to have done that research. I'm going to have, you know, the topics that the candidates are interested in. I'm going to identify those, and that's what I'm going to vote on. It's not going to be based on party lines. It's going to be based on what they're focusing on. So
that's great. Thanks, Andrew. And yeah, if only everyone was like Andrew.
I'd be curious to see how well that correlates with his party registration when he's ultimately said and done.
Do you think in the end that's what it comes down to?
No, but I think it's a big predictor. And part of it's not just because it's what team am I on. And there's certainly that's part of it. But oftentimes parties have a basket of policies that folks tend to align themselves with. And that's why you tend to see it as well. So it's the team aspect, but it's also the policies as well.
But just to be clear, everyone that's listening, because we've had a lot of calls and emails from people who are confused, it is a unitary election.
Anybody and everybody can vote.
Yeah, you can vote for anyone you want on the ballot. You don't have to re-register in another party or anything.
Not a primary, anything like that.
Right. It's a unitary election. And I know it's at an odd time, too, March.
Yeah, we in Jacksonville like our weird elections. There's some institutional incentives that keep people in place, and it keeps people with certain voices with more influence in the outcomes.
A cynic might say certain players might want low turnout in this election. It'll be about 30% turnout.
There's no way it's even that high. I think we're probably closer to 25.
Why do you think that?
We were barely at 30 in March last time, and 32 in May of and there was so much more money and attention in a hotly contested mayoral race. We don't have that this March. There's probably not even going to be a mayor's race on the ballot in May. Turnout could be in the teens for that or lower.
We'll have to see, though. I didn't see Alvin Brown winning when he won, and the polling didn't show him losing when he lost. So I've learned the hard way never to say never on an election.
Oh, it's not true. The polling, we had him behind a little bit. I mean, we didn't poll for the May election. We polled in March, and we had the
places. That's what I remember.
Right.
Yeah. I remember.
And he did win. He won March.
Yeah.
So
that's what makes it fun to cover. Anything can happen. Susan is in Mandarin. Hi, Susan. Good morning.
I went to a forum yesterday sponsored by Indivisible Mandarin, and I heard Tony Cummings speak, and he brought up the idea that he is in favor of the Civil Review Board, and so that swayed me. I'm going to be voting for Tony Cummings, and I'd like to say that I really enjoyed that forum. It was local. It was for Mandarin people, and I felt like I was part of a community, and I wonder if that's what we're lacking in our city, is if we can get together as groups and feel like our voices are being heard. We have these candidates out there one-on-one making themselves available to speak to us and give us their ideas. People were asking questions about JEA, dredging, sea level rise, education, algae, gun show loophole. These are concerns for our community. And I'm just really puzzled on why people don't get out and vote. I mean, voting, these candidates, our city council, can make a difference in our lives, and I don't understand why people don't get out and vote. So, I mean, that's one of my questions. Why don't people vote? And the other question is about polling. Sometimes polling, I wonder, the questions lead people one way or the other. I remember one poll that UNF had about saying that people don't support taking out the people with the Confederate flags. Okay, so yeah, if you ask if you want them taken out, or if you ask them if they want to move them to a Civil War thing, it's a different question. Okay,
Susan.
Thank you very much for taking my call.
Thank you. And why don't people vote? Well, that is a question that we could talk about all day. Forget about local elections. Lots of Americans don't vote in national elections.
Right. And there's a couple things, and she made some good points that I want to address a little bit. The not voting thing is even just your callers and your listeners are, I think, more interested, more engaged, and pay more attention than the average voter for a lot of reasons.
Right.
And a lot of them don't know
what's going on here.
Right. A lot of them don't know what's happening at these races. There's not a lot of media attention. There's very little money on the campaigns for the city councils. People just don't know. You really have to seek it out. That's hard to do for a lot of folks for a bunch of reasons. When it comes to the polling aspect and the question wording, all of our question wordings out there publicly, and she's right, those are different questions. These are pretty straightforward, particularly because they're election questions and we know who's going to be on the ballot. We know the order of what the ballot looks like. So these are very straightforward. But a lot of those policy questions, she's right, they can, depending upon the wording, get you different responses.
It's 549-2937. If you're just tuning in, lots of calls this morning for Mike Binder. He runs UNF's Public Opinion Research Lab and has new numbers out in the city's top races that will be on the ballot when you go to the polls on March 19th. You can vote early, too. Early voting starts in a couple of weeks. And get out and vote. I know everybody went out and voted, you know, in November. You need to get out and vote again. Okay, Jacksonville, don't blow it off. All right, let's go to Rodney at the Beaches. Hi, Rodney. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. Thank you for taking my call. I love your show. Determining who gets my vote is definitely the most important local issue for me, the crime rate. Mayor Curry has hired more officers, and it's not working. What is Anna Borchet going to do differently? And her answer to that question will determine who I vote for.
Yeah. You know, when she appeared on this program, she took calls from listeners like you. And her approach is, let's go heavier on prevention and intervention strategies, finding more money in the city budget to invest in the kind of initiatives that over time bring down crime rates. You know, that is the difference. The main policy difference that we've seen, at least based on their public statements, between these two candidates.
Yeah, I think that's probably fair to say. The problem with crime is no matter who the mayor is, you're working on the margins. It is such a deep sociological issue, and the factors that go into breeding it and perpetuating it, you can't just change by changing a politician who's been elected to office. It's not just about enforcement. It's not just about prevention. It's not just about the nonprofits. It's not just about the churches and the communities. It's about all of those things. And that's really hard to solve.
It is. You know, and as we've talked about on this show before, a prior mayor, John Payton, really did the heavy lift of trying to get at those root causes with a massive citywide effort that has been partially defunded. And so when we have people on this show talking about this issue, the issue in our local politics, so many people have come in here, Mike, and said, we need a dedicated funding source that will transcend mayoral administrations, that is focused long-term on the kinds of prevention and intervention and family strengthening initiatives that can really make a difference. Because when those initiatives were deployed citywide, they were starting to bring down the numbers, and then the financial crash happened and the numbers started to go back up.
You have a large segment of this society, and this is not unique to Jacksonville. There are a series of large major cities have these problems where there is a group of folks that are essentially cut off from society, and they've got their own society built up, and that society is not based on laws and order. It's based on violence and strength. And that problem is very hard to overcome, and it takes a lot of resources.
Herman on the South Side. Hi, Herman. What are your thoughts this morning? Good morning.
Good morning, Dr. Ross. Mr. Bender, I'm a little bit confused about pulled over off the bridge when I heard you say this. Most of the candidates have been saying that crime is all over the city of Duval County, but sound like I heard you say that the crime is localized as if it's in one specific area of town. If you could bring a little bit clarity to that, I would appreciate it. And lastly, as I land the plane, did your group look into anything to see how much of this was the female vote, the minority vote, going for either Brochet, and I was about to say Delaney, but it's not Delaney, Mr. Curry.
Okay, sure. Did they break down race, gender, and so forth? And, you know, he has a point, Mike. When you talk to criminologists and people that study this issue, we do have a crime issue that goes across big parts of the county. It's not really just in one part of town.
If you look at where murders and serious violent crime occur, vast majorities come in very small zip codes.
Yeah, but that's not to say it's only in those zip codes.
No, but that it's very disingenuous to consider Jacksonville crime-ridden, to think that crime is happening equally across all zip codes in the city. It's not. It's predominantly happening in a very few set of zip codes. And yes, obviously there is crime in Mandarin. Obviously there is crime everywhere. But the level and the type are minuscule relative to the crime that's happening in certain segments of this city.
I think, though, what I heard him saying was, I think some voters hear a racialized aspect to this. So what about that? And what about his question that did the poll break down race and gender when you asked people who they like?
We did. And you can go to UNF's website and you can check out the cross tabs on all the demographic breakdowns on race, gender, education, sex, all of that based on not only the vote for mayor, but for all the city council races and the constitutional officers as well. Not only the sheriff, but the property appraiser, the tax collector. All of those races were polled, and all that data is up on UNF Portal's website.
Yeah, and just go to unf.edu, Herman, and you can find the results, I think, easily.
Just Google search Public Opinion Research Lab, and we're right there.
549-2937. Ann is on the north side. Hi, Ann. How are you?
I'm fine, but I'm very concerned that everybody is thinking crime is the biggest issue, and it's not. Our current mayor is an underhanded, sneaky guy. And I'd like everybody to go back in their memory and remember who it was who was trying to sell JEA out from under us and not letting anybody know about it. And it was Anna Brochet who called his hand on it. And we would have been way out of luck with the JEA if she hadn't done that. He was backhanded. And I would like to also call everyone's attention to the fact that we're going to lose one of the access roads to the Hart Bridge, and no one really has known a lot about that until it's a done deal. The money has been allocated and everything. I didn't know anything about it until it was half done. There are all sorts of other things. The HRO, our mayor, was not upfront about that. He never did state an opinion. I think the man is not honest. And I've also heard rumors about how he has to have his crony get work before anybody has access to the mayor. I don't like the man. I don't think that he's honest, and I don't want him to continue in the office no matter what he does on crime. I don't think crime is something that any one individual mayor can have anything to do with. So I'd like everybody to check their memories for the kind of man he's been throughout his tenure. Thank you.
Okay, and that's Ann on the north side. All right. Now, she got at the other narrative that Lenny Curry's challenger, Anna Brochet, has driven on the campaign trail, saying this administration has not been a transparent one. Allegations of cronyism, backroom deals, a backdoor effort to sell JEA, which went over with the public like a lead balloon. Allegations of cronyism at City Hall. She has talked about that as well. It's registering with some voters. Did it show up, though, in your polling? Did you ask about that?
We didn't. We asked about JEA and selling it. That information is not presented here. It'll come out at a later time. And again, much like that caller, it was not a particularly popular initiative. The idea that the Curry administration is not transparent, I think, is a fair criticism by any objective standard. But oftentimes, a lot of administrations tend to avoid transparency. That tends to be the unicorn if folks are particularly transparent. So I don't know that it's really crept into the mind of a lot of voters. Obviously, Brochet supporters are beating that drum, but it's not something that's made its way across the city just yet.
Daniel in Riverside. Hi, Daniel. What are your thoughts? Good morning.
Hi, Melissa. I just wanted to ask a question. You talked about what are the strengths that Mayor Curry kind of goes into Election Day with, but I'm curious if there are any weaknesses that the poll showed that could turn his numbers into a different direction.
Mike Binder.
Ironically, there's not many. Just about all the issues, he's so far ahead of Brochet There are very few avenues for her to peel away at. The fact that she's running even among Democrats is stunning to me, because the efforts that she's made to reach out to that community and the endorsements and support she's gotten from leaders in that community, particularly the African-American community. I think it would take something catastrophic to happen in the city of Jacksonville to alter this outcome.
Here's an email from Tom. I just can't imagine rewarding the sheriff and the mayor when we have the highest crime rates in Florida. How can we do such a thing?
Well, based on the poll results, we're poised to do just that. So I don't know if it's the right answer, but it's certainly the answer that a lot of folks here in Jacksonville are supportive of. And to be fair, you know, we don't know a lot about the alternatives. And that's part of the problem with this election season. The candidates that have chosen to run against the incumbents haven't done a great job getting their message out, don't have the resources to do it effectively, and quite frankly, started much too late in order to get those voices heard.
That's not something that obviously a pollster asks about, but money is a big factor in all of these races. Who has the money to really blanket the airwaves, blanket people's mailboxes with flyers and all the campaign tactics?
You say it like it's a negative thing, and people often say money in politics is terrible. But the fact of the matter is, how the heck else are we going to get to know these people? The earlier caller that talked about that forum that she was at in Mandarin, that's great. But how many people were there? Maybe 100. There are 600,000 registered voters in Jacksonville. You cannot go door to door and shake all their hands. You can't have, there's not enough days in the year to meet 100 people every day and make any kind of dent in the electorate. You need to go over mass media, be it mail, be it radio, be it television, mm-hmm. to get your voice out and to get your message out. And unless you can do that, and that takes resources, and resources are money, you're going to not get heard. And it doesn't matter how good your ideas are. If nobody knows what they are, nobody's going to support you.
He's Mike Bender. He runs UNF's Public Opinion Research Lab. Full results on his website and on our website today at wjctnews.org. Remember, mark your calendar and get out and vote in March. Mike, always good to see you. Thank you.
Great to be here. Thank you.
And still ahead, it's a food pantry for the city that looks and feels like a grocery store. We'll tell you about it. Plus, moving it downtown to make a difference in this community. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9, and we'll be right back. I'm Melissa Ross.
And I'm Tom Hudson. Join us Friday for the Florida Roundup, where we talk about the biggest stories in the state.
From politics to education, the environment, and more. If it's news in Florida, we want to hear from you.
Let your voice be heard. Join the conversation on the Florida Roundup.
Fridays at noon on WJCT.
Christina. What's on the front page of today's Times Union?
At the top of the page, Florida lawmakers made...
Around the country, volunteers are reading local newspapers to people with vision loss or print disabilities. Did you know WJCT has this service? On a special radio we provide, you'll get the Florida Times Union every day. Learn more at wjct.org/radio reading. With help from sponsors like Florida Eye Specialists, Radio Reading gives voice to the printed word.
I'm David Luckin, inviting you to listen to the Electro Lounge for the best down-tempo and new jazz at 9 p.m. Monday through Saturday nights, only on 89.9 FM, WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, Lutheran Social Services of Northeast Florida is hosting a grand opening Thursday of its new Nourishment Network Market. Now, this is what's called a client choice food pantry. It's basically a food pantry that is like a grocery store. And this is opening up on the South Side. Mary Strickland is the CEO of LSS, and she's here now with more. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me on.
All right. So what is a client choice food pantry?
So in the traditional food pantry model, you go in and you get a bag of prepackaged foods, and we hand you a bag of groceries and say thank you, and you're on your way. But in this new model, consumer choice model, we've actually built a small grocery store in our facility, and you can come in with a grocery cart. You can choose from produce, fruit, vegetables. We have meat. We have frozen food. So it's really like a shopping experience rather than getting something just in a bag.
So why go to this way of giving out food?
This is so much of a more tailored approach to giving out food, because what happens is when you give people prepackaged food, you give them things they may not like, they may not want to cook. This way, they can select what they want. And it also is very helpful if you have a diabetic or you have a hypertension person, because maybe they shouldn't be eating certain foods. This way, they can choose what they like to eat, and what is best for them.
Okay, so how can people be part of this? And how many people are you hoping to serve?
Well, we serve over 2,000 people a month in our Nourishment Network market. This is a what's called an emergency food pantry, which means you can come once a month. We're open 5 days a week in our location, and you can find the hours online. And this is for people who are struggling with food insecurity, people that maybe cannot afford to go to the grocery store at this moment, and so they need to have another source of food.
Let's talk about that issue of food insecurity in Florida, because I don't think people realize, Mary, just how big a problem it is. How many people out there have to decide between buying groceries or putting gas in their car, or buying groceries and taking their kid to the dentist, or whatever it is? That's the very definition of food insecurity.
That is absolutely true, Melissa. People need to eat. But here's the thing. Many people have bills to pay that require cash money. They need to pay their rent. They need to pay their phone bill, their JEA bill. So if you can go to an emergency food pantry, that kind of relieves a little bit of the stress of having to pay all those bills, because then at least you can get good food for your family. We get many phone calls for people asking us to help them pay their rent because people are struggling. Even people that are working are struggling. This is a way of providing a service for people that really need it. Everybody needs to eat. Everybody needs healthy food, and this is what we're trying to provide.
And the majority of people coming in are working people. That's something that I don't think is often that well understood.
Yes, absolutely. They are working people. But remember, many people don't have full-time jobs. Many people can't get the hours that they need. Sometimes they're just in a period of unemployment. Oftentimes, we'll see people maybe two or three times at the food pantry and then never again, because then they get another job or they get another source of income. But this is really important for people that are struggling right now.
So this grocery store-like food pantry is up. And is this a model that you kind of hope to replicate in other parts of the city, places where there are big food deserts? You know, those are places where there's no grocery store for miles around.
Yes. In fact, this is not the first consumer choice pantry. Beam has one down at the beaches, and we went to see theirs, and it's a wonderful model. We're working a lot with Feeding Northeast Florida. This would not be possible without their help. They provided a lot of capital to us. We're working with them to look at other locations to set up similar consumer choice pantries.
That's exciting.
It's very exciting, but we couldn't do this without our partners. As I said, Feeding Northeast Florida has been a great partner. Trulieve is one of our sponsors. We've had help from the United Way. We've had help from all different other partners. Vision is Priceless comes to our food pantry. So we also offer other services in addition to just the food when you come to the pantry.
Like what?
Well, Vision is Priceless will come. We have a nutritionist from University of Florida doing food demonstrations in our market. So just like when you go to Publix and you see them cooking a recipe, we have that in our food market as well. We can show you the recipe and exactly what you can cook getting food from the food pantry. We even give out samples.
Very nice. You know, this kind of brings up a related issue. People don't know how to cook anymore.
That is very true.
Lots of people, not just people coming to your pantry.
Absolutely. But here's another fun part of the market that's different. When the person comes to the market, we have a volunteer walking through the market with them, and they go through the selections with them. You can get a certain number of items depending on how large your family is. So oftentimes I hear the volunteers talking to the clients saying, hey, how can you make this? How do you cook this? What is this for? It's wonderful because there's sometimes things at the market they're not familiar with, but the volunteer can tell them how to cook it.
That's exciting. And by the way, this is the only client choice food pantry anywhere in sort of the city center. This is on the south side.
Right, on the south side.
There's something like this at the beaches, but this is the first one in the city of Jacksonville.
Yes, that is correct. And we're located on Phillips Highway, and there is parking there. So it's a great location for people because, you know, there it's a little bit not close to the downtown, but close enough that you could drive there. Oftentimes, we have people carpooling to the food pantry. We'll often serve two or three families at the same time in the same car.
Who qualifies? How can people access this? Who is allowed to come in and shop? And once they're in, how many times can they come a week? How many items can they take? What are the rules?
It's an emergency food pantry, which means you can only come once a calendar month. We give you a certain number of food items based on the size of your family. We ask you to just show us a photo ID, but it's an honor system. So if you come to the pantry, we will record your information, but we're not going to ask you to prove it. So you come on the honor system, you line up, you have your photo ID, we take your information, and then you're on your way.
Are you worried at all about people taking advantage of the system?
I feel if people are hungry enough to come, then we should provide the food. So
yeah.
I don't look at it that way. I look at it, if you're here, then you must need to be here.
Where does the food come from?
Well, some of it's purchased. We purchase it from Feeding Northeast Florida. We get donations. We get a lot of donations from local grocery stores, from the Garden, from Publix, from Winn-Dixie, because sometimes they can't sell the food, but they can give it to us and then we can distribute it.
That's exciting.
It is.
Yeah.
It's a way of preventing wasted food as well. Because remember, some of this food may go to waste, but we have it at the food pantry and we can give it out to people.
Does that bother you? You work in this business. Does it bother you knowing just how much food Americans waste? It's an incredible amount.
It is an incredible amount. I even see it in my own household. And it's something, we shouldn't be wasting so much food because there are people that are hungry that could use the food.
What could people do about that? Average people listening to you right now, how can we do a better job with that?
Well, in terms of helping food pantries that are local, you can donate to lssjacks.org. You can participate in a canned food drive. But another fun thing to do is actually to work as a volunteer in the market because that's the fun part. The fun part, honestly, is interacting with the clients that come in and talking to them and laughing and seeing their babies. It's actually a lot of fun. So I think, honestly, volunteering is the fun part of it.
And you always need volunteers. Now, let me ask you, too, because I've gone and stacked shelves at food banks in this community. People think, well, I want to just donate extra food that I have. Isn't it better, though, to write a check? Because I've heard that if you donate money, the dollar goes a lot. You can buy a lot more food in bulk that way.
Yes, we can, because our dollar goes a lot farther because we do buy food in bulk and we do buy from different types of producers. So yes, of course, the money goes farther than the cans. But at the same time, I want people to feel like if that's what you want to donate, if that's what you're able to donate, sure, donate cans of food. That's great.
All right. Now, as I mentioned, we are talking about a brand new client choice food pantry on the South Side. This is Lutheran Social Services Nourishment Network Market. They just had their grand opening. Actually, they're going to have their grand opening on Thursday. It's the first and only client choice food pantry in the South Side area. People can come out to this grand opening. What's the street number, by the way?
We're at 4615 Phillips Highway. It's at 11 a.m. tomorrow, the 21st of February. I also want to mention that this is our 40th anniversary for Lutheran Social Services, and we started as a food pantry 40 years ago here in Jacksonville.
It's quite a legacy, isn't it?
It's a different way to serve people. We started out with cans of food, and now we have the consumer choice model. So we've evolved to meet the needs of the people that we're serving.
All right. Well, Mary Strickland, the CEO of Lutheran Social Services, thanks for joining us. Thanks for all the work you do in the community. Kudos.
Thank you.
Much more still to come. Keep listening. Thank you.
witness over three decades of jazz, through 22 top five albums, five of which hit number one on the Billboard charts. The Rippingtons, featuring Russ Freeman, have continued to innovate. Jazz's magazine has called their debut album the number one most influential contemporary jazz album of all time. Don't miss your chance to see the Rippingtons live at the WJCT Soundstage, March 28th. Tickets on sale now at floridatheater.com.
Welcome back. Well, it's a 5K and a cause worth moving it for. On March 2nd, Calford Chop House will host its third annual Move It 5K. It's in remembrance of the late Michael Lyles, former executive director of the Justice Coalition. Now, the race takes place downtown, and it benefits the Justice Coalition. They advocate on behalf of victims of crime in our five-county area. Here with more, Nicole White, Calford Chop House Operations Coordinator. Good morning.
Good morning.
And Robert Bracewell, Chair of the Justice Coalition. Robert, good morning to you.
Good morning.
And before we talk about the race, let's talk about the Justice Coalition. It is an important organization founded by the late Ted Hires, who I remember so well.
Right.
You're motivated to advocate for crime victims. Can you tell us a little bit about the work?
The work of the Justice Coalition is to provide advocacy for innocent victims of violent crime, provide immediate crisis intervention, education regarding their rights, act as liaison between victims, prosecutors, law enforcement, and media. The Justice Coalition is a nonprofit organization, and we have been advocating for victims since 1995 when Ted Hires started it.
And he was motivated, as I recall, to start it because someone close to him was affected by a violent crime. Isn't that right?
He was himself.
It was him himself.
Absolutely.
That's right.
After several robberies.
Yes.
In in his business, he owned Sonny's Barbecue.
Of course, yeah.
And his struggles through the court system of trying to get things done on his behalf, that's when he decided that he needed to do something himself and founded the Justice Coalition.
And so you educate victims about their rights. You work with law enforcement. You advocate for victims in court, too, right?
That's correct.
And yes. How does that work?
Our advocates, when they're contacted by a victim or law enforcement, they work on their behalf to meet with them in court. They provide information for their services that are available to them. They help them with an impact statement at a hearing for sentencing. And they help them apply for different services that are available and grief counseling.
There's so much that's needed. So you're really filling a lot of important gaps.
Absolutely.
You're also honoring the late Michael Lyles, who was the executive director of the Justice Coalition, who passed away recently. So we're going to keep talking about his legacy as well. And the Move It 5K, this is happening not this weekend, but next weekend in downtown Jacksonville. This is a way you can get out and move and run or walk and also help the Justice Coalition. In a moment, all the details about the race and everything that's happening. So we want you right here listening. We're going to take a quick break. More to come. Keep listening.
Calling all teachers. Wes Moore, the CEO of Robinhood, one of the largest anti-poverty forces in the nation, best-selling author, a combat veteran, and a social entrepreneur, will be one of the keynote speakers at this year's Teach Conference, a day to engage, empower, and inspire. Saturday, March 2nd at the Hyatt Hotel. Attendees will enjoy breakfast, lunch, a swag bag, and so much more. Information at wjct.org
ncc.gov/teach.
Martin Luther King Jr. came to embody the ideal of peaceful, nonviolent protest. So how did he handle his anger?
He came very dangerously close at that particular time to hating all white people.
I'm Ari Shapiro, turning anger into positive action. This afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today at 4 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
Fewer Americans are learning a second language in school, and that can have national consequences.
Many jobs go unfilled, but it's not just diplomacy in the military. It's really across government departments.
The decline of foreign language programs in the U.S., that's next time on The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI.
Weekdays at 2 on 89.9 WJCT.
It's illegal to fire people based on many personal attributes. But what about firing someone because of their hairstyle? New York City is considering banning that. It's been a problem for many groups, including African Americans. Hair without harassment. Next time on 1A.
Today at 10 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Talking about the third annual Move It 5K coming up downtown next weekend, helping to raise money for the Justice Coalition. All right. Nicole White of Cowford Chop House, you are sponsoring this event, and Cowford Chop House has made such a splash in downtown Jacksonville. First off, let's talk about that for a minute.
Yeah, we're really proud of Cowford. We're doing our third annual Move It this year. The first year, we were still under construction, so that was a little messy. Last year, of course, after being open, we hosted, and this year, we're hoping to just make it even better than years prior.
Okay, and Move It, of course, is a moo reference to the cows of Cowford Chop House, and this is a way for people to come downtown and participate in a really fun 5K. Maybe if they're thinking about training for the Gate River Run, they could start with this.
Yes, it's great timing to train for the Gate River Run. We also have a 1 mile fun run. My kids running that, which is a blast. That is at 9:30 next Saturday morning. And then the 5K itself begins at 10. We're gonna go start and finish in front of Cowford and run a new course this year that's down by the river, down along the South Bank, passing the landing, and then returning with a block party in front of Cowford.
Now, you've also partnered with the Winston Family YMCA. It's a Couch to 5K training program. I think a lot of people might actually need that.
Myself included.
Myself included.
Yeah. We've done a Couch to 5K training program. The Y has been gracious enough to sponsor that for us. They've done a Couch to 5K and a Couch to 15K for those preparing for the Gate.
All right. Go to firstplacesports.com to register for the third annual Move It 5K coming up next weekend. And once again, Robert Bracewell, this is a way to support the Justice Coalition, too.
Absolutely.
Proceeds go to you guys.
That's correct. That, Melissa, that's absolutely correct. And we really, really appreciate Cowford Chop House. I mean, it's been, most of the time, the Justice Coalition, it's always about tragedy and heartbreak. And this is something that, you know, we can get out in the community and everybody will be blessed and have a good time with the folks at Cowford.
Get out and run and or walk. And thanks so much, Nicole White of Cowford, Robert Bracewell, chair of the Justice Coalition. Thanks, guys.
Thank you so much.
All right. Finally, this hour. Earlier in the show, we talked about the upcoming March 19th city elections. Are you still trying to figure out the races and the candidates? Never fear. Bill Bortsfield is here. He's our digital editor at WJCTnews.org. Bill, you've been working really hard on our election build out on the website.
Well, I don't know if I'd consider it hard. I'd consider it more fun than anything
more
else.
Fun.
But yeah, in fact, of course, the voter deadline was yesterday, so now it's time to really start studying up on the candidates. And that's something that we really want to help folks with. So we did put together a voter's guide. Most importantly, perhaps, it has a list of every single candidate. In many cases, we have candidate profiles. In all cases, we have campaign finance reports. And we also have a lot of utility things that voters need on the website. For example, Do you know where your precinct is? Maybe you don't. You go to the website, throw in your address and zip code, boom, your precinct comes up. Things like that, the old, you know, the utility thing.
Yeah.
But also very important is the coverage that we have. For example, there have been several attack ads in the mayoral race. What's fact and what's kind of borderline? We have done fact checks on those ads for folks. We also have teamed up with our partners. So, for example, we have a profile of the District 14 candidates that was done in conjunction with the Jacksonville Daily Record.
There's a lot on this build-out. How can people access the voter guide?
So we usually keep it right on the homepage in one form or another. It's in our navigation, or if people prefer to go there directly, it's at WJCT.org/elections. And, you know, I want to also point out that there's a real appetite for political news. You know, in October, we found that the majority of our top 10 stories were all election related. So we do know there is an appetite for political news here in Jacksonville, which is encouraging.
Absolutely. It's the time of year when you need to study up on the elections, the races, and the candidates. Go to WJCT.org/elections. Digital editor Bill Bortsfield has broken it all down for you. The mayor's race, the other races, the top issues, even down to your precinct finder and your sample ballot. So no excuses, Duval. Just go to WJCT.org/elections so you are fully prepared to vote knowledgeably on March 19th. And Bill Bortsfield, fabulous work as always. On doing all of this. Thank you so much for all of that and for joining us this morning.
Thank you, Melissa.
And that's our show. Thanks for listening. 1A is up next. I'm Melissa Ross. If you're listening to our rebroadcast tonight at 8 o'clock, just keep listening for the Electoral Lounge. We'll be back right here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow morning. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.